Music, among other things.
Music among other things.
Music.
Did you go? What else did you get? The double sausage McMuffin or something?
Breakfast roll.
Fair enough. No further questions.
Yeah, I don't know what you wanted. This isn't one of your shitty games.
It's a pleasure to have Richard Sturges back in our midst. Welcome back, Rich.
Pleasure.
Welcome to the MEOT orbit again. Describe your... let's have a little catch up and check in. Your life at the moment in three words.
At the moment... Dogs, sweat, insect bites. Does insect bites count as one word?
Yeah, I reckon the hyphen will get through there. Well, excellent. So we're going to be doing this, we're calling it an MEOT doc watch. So the idea is we all watch the documentary, and then we come on the show and then we chat about it. And this one we've chosen has been the Coldplay Head Full of Dreams one, and I thought it would be a good one because I think Coldplay is quite a divisive band. It'd be quite good to get into, like, where it's sort of, I don't know, I always feel like they get a really bad rap, and I can sort of recall that from, I don't know, even like around X and Y, I think they started getting a lot of like bad rap for stuff, so it'd be quite good to get into it. But first of all, Richard, because I know you're a man of heavy opinions, what were your thoughts and feelings on Coldplay before being forced to watch this documentary, which from your messages it seemed like it was a chore?
I would say I've never like gone out of my way to listen to them.
Yeah,
gotta remember, I wasn't like, as a kid I wasn't particularly into music, so I feel like at the time they were sort of coming out, like first couple of albums, I wasn't really into music anyway.
Yeah.
And I would just hear whatever was on the radio or whatever people would chat about. So I would hear it in that capacity and was kind of like, yeah, I suppose it's good. That's music, I guess.
Yeah.
And then since then, it's kind of the early stuff I think is all right.
Yeah.
It's not my bag really, but the more recent stuff, I would say I don't like.
Yeah, that's so, fair to say. Well, it sort of reminds me of, I don't know if you have the same thing, but because they were everywhere on the radio, it sort of reminds me of like summer holidays at, you know, when you're off from school for 6 weeks and I'll be like driving around to parks or whatever. But because, I think it was like Rush of Blood to the Head, which is probably came out when I was like 9 or 10. So I just hear like The Scientist all the time. I actually remember the first time I heard it was I was going down like a water slide in Portugal and just heard that wolf bit of the song. Do you know what I mean? Just coming over the speakers. So I always remember that for some reason.
Which bit? Wolf.
Yeah, the that one. What about you, Neil? What were your thoughts and feelings on Coldplay before going into the doc?
Yeah, no, I'd say overall positive. I love the first couple of albums. I remember buying X and Y actually, and really? I remember buying Speed of Sound an album as well. Was that just a single?
That was just a single, I think. Yeah.
What album was that on? Was that on X and Y?
I think so. Yeah, X and Y.
Yeah. So I remember those days being around like year eight or something. And I've always quite liked Coldplay. It's one of those where like I will struggle to fully kind of dive into an album of theirs. I think they're one of those where if you saw them live, they can put together a really great kind of set, or you know, if you played like a best of Coldplay, you could have some really good songs in there. But albums, I think they're quite happy to put in a lot of filler shit. Like people know that their worst albums are very bad, but their great albums are very good, in my opinion. So yeah, I'm always been a bit of a Coldplay fan. I actually saw them in Wembley a few years ago, and they were they were okay. They disappointed me a bit because I thought I quite like Chris Martin, but on the night he was really cliched. You know, right. we were seeing him like a Thursday in the middle of their tour sort of thing. And he was like, I just want to put this out there, guys. This is the best crowd we've ever played to. And it's like, oh, for God's sake, come on. Like,
yeah.
It's just a bit generic. And like, I respect when people either don't say that or they're just genuinely honest. And I just felt like it was a bit kind of cheesy and cringy. But yeah, we all know the look now where he's got his like blue t-shirt over that white long sleeve shirt. It was the Head Full of Dreams days. But and I really love the documentary as well, to be fair.
Yeah, I think it's a weird one because obviously when you play into like stadiums, you really need to know how to work the crowd. And it must be quite a hard thing to do. And probably to a certain extent, you do have to be a little generic, do you know what I mean? To be able to appeal to, like, when you're playing to 90,000 people in the stadium. But I've always felt that as well. Like, I've always been interested in hearing what they're doing. But obviously, I'd say, like, the last few albums, like, there's always, like, one or two tracks I like. But I feel like he writes to the crowd too much and he always has that in his head. And I do genuinely think he's a great melodist and they have the capability to do something really good, but I think while they have that big crowd in their head and, you know, looking to please people, it seems to me that he can't really, you know, I don't know, I think there's like a disconnection there, or that always probably happens with bands. I mean, when they get to a certain level, they can't really write anything too intimate, even though that last album was more intimate. They had like a sort of quieter record, but
they're quite a rare band in that. I think how I heard of them is like my fucking childminder when I was really young. Right. She was like, oh, I love this new band. They just released Parachutes. So they've quite a rare band in that they've got so many different ages of their fan base. Like, it's one of those gigs you go to, you will still get like kind of teenagers there, but then you do get like, you know, 60, 70-year-olds there. So it's quite a diverse audience. So I guess if you kind of start listening to that, and I don't know, because like you say, he's almost building songs to try and adhere to all these different audiences, but it'll be sometimes in the same album, so you'll have songs that appeal to like the younger audiences or certain genres of music, and you'll have just that's why a lot of the albums feel like quite disconnected, I guess. I think he's probably has lost that personal touch maybe in his music. Like Parachutes is feels really raw now when I listen to it, whereas like you say, some of his later albums are very just quite cliche and just a bit X-factory, a bit like forgetful. You'll forget them in like a year's time. They're just very current, not even current sometimes. Temporary.
I mean, even watching the documentary, I don't like, you watch a lot of docs about musicians and songwriters and how they go through like personal stuff, and then they're trying to get that out in the music or whatever, or they're trying to, or someone like really pushing the boundaries of music, for example.
Yeah,
Coldplay didn't seem that. All I kind of got from the doc was they're trying to make it, and they're trying to, you know, get people to like it in a way.
Yeah.
There was a moment, I think they was chatting about the album where he'd just broken up with Gwyneth.
Yeah.
And obviously that seemed a bit more personal to him and that helped him and stuff. And that bit I thought, oh, that's quite cool.
Yeah. That's sort of around.
Yeah, he's obviously really talented, Chris Martin, as well as a songwriter and the band as well.
Yeah.
But just seems like they are just trying to appeal to an audience. I think that's why I never really got into it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're sort of right there, because it always seems like even when you see him around X and Y, you know, that seemed like quite a dark period for them as a band. They're sort of getting down on their luck because they're wanting to appeal to so many people. It seems like they don't really believe in the project themselves, and there was that whole article that came out, and I think that's where the tide turned on them, really, around like the X and Y era. They were sort of quite loved before that. But I mean,
is that the one where their friend or manager, Phil?
Yeah, that's right. He left or something, didn't he? Yeah. So, I mean, we'll like get into it in a bit more detail, but it seems like the doc is sort of around that Head Full of Dreams album, which it seems like they mentioned that was a spot they were trying to get to for years, which is interesting because it's sort of probably the one I've connected to the least. But obviously, you know, what I do respect with him is that they do tend to change it up every album, like even though it seems like the sort of same bright pop that they've been doing for the past few, at least they're trying something new and they're not just like being bland, I guess. But yeah, it's interesting that, you know, they seem to see Head for the Dreams as that sort of pinnacle spot, and he was sort of saying, oh, I don't care if people like it, but I'm having fun in the studios. But obviously they use that as the starting point, and then they sort of flip back to the early days. And it's weird because, like, you know, in those like late 90s 2000s footage, I noticed that for one, students are like proper students. Like when you look at those pictures, you can almost like smell like the weed and like the garlic bread. You know what I mean? I always knew like, and also there's a bit of like a shit color palette as well. Like there's so many like people wearing like browns and blues, and it just looks sort of I don't know, it looks really weird back then. Do you feel like you'd be able to place that sort of crowd when you were at uni, Neil? Or if there was like would you be hanging around with those guys?
I know the guys you mean, but I can't actually think of any personally from uni. It's probably you.
Yeah.
it's weird when you see how they looked when they were that young, because they were just so, I mean, they're dorky anyway. Well, it's more like Chris Martin's always going to be a dork, isn't he? But
yeah,
when you've got them being interviewed at like 18, 17, whatever, they are such dorks. And it's like, but they play yeah. to it as well. They really do play to it. But
yeah. I think it seems like Chris Martin's just like a ball of energy back then. You know, it's quite impressive actually, that little sequence where he's talking to the camera and he looks like some gawky 18-year-old, and he's saying, oh, in 4 years time we're gonna be fucking massive. And then they flip to the bit at Glastonbury in like 2002, and they are actually playing to those massive crowds. Yeah. It's actually quite crazy.
I've always quite liked Chris Martin. I think he's misunderstood a lot of the time, but I think he's just a
I can see Rich, shaking his head.
He's such a passionate guy, and he's just very confident, but people take that as like arrogant. I'm sure.
I never really thought he's arrogant.
Well, why did you say it off air?
Don't you lie. I just think he's so cringe.
Really? Yeah,
just everything about him just cringes me out. Plus the aesthetic they always go for. It's just like,
yeah, the aesthetic.
I always think about that with the other band members. It's like Chris Martin just sort of slapping neon paint on everybody. It's like, come on, let's do it again, guys.
That's the thing. The other, when you see these performances, the other band members are kind of just like, they seem quite
reserved,
not professional. Yeah, reserved, and they're just kind of like letting Chris get on with it. He's like unleashing this Labrador for like 2 hours, and then they kind of go backstage like, did you enjoy that?
Yeah.
You also see like they're wearing black.
Yeah.
And he's very much the front man. It's very much about him, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. What you know, when you were front man of Tusker Rich, is there any parallels DC to Chris Martin? You didn't ever have any stage props like a light that you swung about.
Oh god, I quite like that light. They're quite fun.
Yeah.
No, and I've never played any venues that were really big enough to do that. I'm gonna be Coco. But
yeah, I remember that looking huge actually when you guys played that. I was like, oh yeah, shit. It's like it's quite.
Yeah, mate. I can't imagine playing a massive stadium like Coldplay Dark. I was thinking that like that looks insane.
Did you ever have an oh whoa in your like Tusker stuff, Rich?
Oh, what?
An oh, whoa. You know, like a oh. Oh. You ever have an oh? Like a...
We had a song called Da Da Da.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Da 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 Da. But basically, I just couldn't think of any lyrics pretty much and was just singing this little tune from that.
Because, I mean, obviously, they're known for their oh, whoas. I mean, Neil Young. I went to see him in like 2012. It's quite a random day actually. It was at the Emirates Stadium, and we went to an Arsenal pub just beforehand, Neil.
Love
and it.
It
was I can't remember what it's called, but it's a really odd crowd in there. We went with a few of my mates who were like Arsenal fans, and there was one of our mates who's quite a tall chap. He essentially pissed in a cup.
Is this at the gig? Oh, I thought you meant in the pub. I was like, Jesus.
No. This is at the gig. And obviously, like, when you're in the stadium, it's like so hard to get to. The logic is throw it forward if you're going to do it. It's a stupid thing to do anyway. But instead, this guy's like 6'3", I'd say, and he threw it backwards and just like piss went over everybody. It's so obvious it was him.
Yeah.
And then this woman just came up and was like, he fucking had it. Just like hitting him and stuff like that. And I was like, do you know what? I have no sympathy for you at the moment because yeah. That was a stupid fucking thing
that
to
was
do.
Stupid.
Especially at a Coldplay gig, you're probably going to have to get a bit more of a mild crowd. But
what's his name?
I won't reveal it just in case
because I was going to call that prick out.
But yeah, it's interesting looking back because, I mean, they got signed relatively quickly. It seemed to happen quite quickly for them. And, you know, it's quite funny seeing, like, you know, their first photo shoot was at Tesco Metro or something in, like, a photo booth and everything. And then, I mean, there was that bit also where they kicked the drummer world champion out of the band for a bit. And they've started to do auditions and it seemed like they went a bit wayward there. And obviously, I know he's not, like, the best drummer, but it seems like they really honour that chemistry. I was wondering, Rich, if you've ever been in a situation where you've had to kick anybody out. I mean, the only one I could think of is in high school where our mate used to try and get us to play Status Quo songs all the time. But we wanted to play rock, man. We wanted to play
rock.
Yeah,
like, that was funny. And I think he was kind of the reason I started playing bass.
Yeah, yeah.
He was kind of the whole reason I started playing music.
Yeah.
So I feel a bit bad now that, you know, kicked him out of the band.
Yeah, I mean, I actually remember that conversation happening at the end of like a garden at someone's house party. And it was just really awkward.
And at the end of the conversation, he just kind of like walked to the end garden.
Yeah. Oh, man. So
we went the opposite
so
way.
So stupid, isn't it, when you look back on it. But
yeah, I'm sorry.
yeah, sorry, man. But I mean, it must be quite hard, like going through stuff like that. And I don't know, it could really. But you've never been in another situation, Rich, where you've had to, you know.
Yeah. Like, obviously, I studied music, and that I guess that's what I connected to most in that documentary, where they're looking at the early part, where they all meet,
yeah.
And they're forming a band, getting used to playing, and building a relationship as well, which is a massive part of it. And that was quite exciting to watch and see it flourish, sort of thing.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I kind of went through the same thing. You know, you meet people at first, and then you think you're getting on, then you don't.
Yeah.
Or musically, it's just not working out, and you have to have an awkward conversation.
Yeah, yeah. It's weird because I get a feeling that they probably wouldn't have made it had Chris Martin not been the driving force, because he seemed like he was like so eager, and obviously he made that work in his favour. Even though I think sometimes when I'm around those eager people, it's quite hard to like keep up with the energy. But I respect it though, proper. I think, but. I feel like, yeah, if it was the other members, they probably wouldn't have got to where they were. But it's interesting, that bit, actually, where they go over to the States for the first time, and they're already built up a bit of a pace in the UK. I think, you know, they were on those, like, festival lineups, and the management just got it totally wrong. So, like, on one of them, it was like, I saw the list, it was like, Newfound Glory opens, then a band called SR71, then Coldplay.
Yeah.
And then Seven Dust, then Tenacious D is on at like 6:25, and like another one was was it Disturbed, The Cult, Coldplay, Papa Roach, Linkin Park. It's just like totally wrong. Like no wonder why they got like so much stick when they were doing that. But it'd be weird if you were a, sort of a punter going to that and just hearing like Yellow in the middle of that sort of thing. But yeah.
But apparently they didn't complain. They just got on with it.
Yeah, which is
nuts. Like, if that was me, I'd just be like, why? No, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, it sort of reminded me. I remember a couple of years ago at like the NME Awards or something, the guy from Bring Me the Horizon went to Coldplay's table because they were getting some awards, and he started like the screaming in Chris Martin's face or something. And he was like, I think he was like maybe trying to be a bit passive aggressive, but to be fair to Chris Martin, he was like, oh, we just loved it. We loved it. So they seem like quite far away from that, but you know, fair play to them. I mean, you must get a lot of shit if you're in Coldplay. So fair play to those guys, I think. It's quite interesting, you know, like the roles in the band as well, because they seem to like honour that quite well. And like, it seems like Will and Guy, the bass and drummer, are sort of the quality surveyors of the music. So you can see them being quite brutal at times, like just saying like, oh, no, this is shit. Mm. Like, this is a shit lyric, which...
What a tough position to be in,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, like telling somebody like Chris Martin, like, oh, yeah, that's shit. But there must be like so many... Obviously, you see a couple of arguments in the doc, but... There must have been some real like heaters within that, I think. But
I mean, there must have been if some of the stuff that came out did come out. So yeah, what was the shit that got turned down? You know,
yeah.
Like they do, like I said, Coldplay release a lot of filler shit, and I think they know that. I hope they do.
Yeah.
But think of the stuff that they'd have to survey and turn down, like There must have been so much shit that Chris had wrote.
It's quite important to have that person in the band, though, isn't it? Like, you should have, like, one filter, you know, they're making, like, the key decisions. But it seems like they've also got that democratic viewpoint, which must be fair props to them because it's so hard to upkeep. Like, you know, obviously we're all fans of the Maccabees, and that's the sort of reason why they didn't continue, because all of the decisions that they made on every track would have to be agreed by all five of them. And when you're doing like album after album, I think they took about 2 or 3 years to write that last one they did. And, you know, you get 11 songs out the back of it. You must just be like, no wonder why you don't want to do it again, because it must take up so much energy. But I mean, these bands are obviously, Coldplay have been together for what, 20 years. So the fact that they're still doing it is pretty insane. Also, there's a bit where he's at an awards show. And I don't remember you seeing it, but he had like thank you written on his stomach, and I was thinking it'd be weird if he didn't win and you just got thank you written on your stomach just all night. It'd just be a weird sensation, I think. But I think the X and Y era is quite interesting because, like you mentioned, Rich, like Phil left for a bit, and there's that. It seems like there's a lot of bullshit around the EMI thing, like there was a slump in stock prices and that they were blamed for not bringing out their album soon enough to upkeep for stakeholders. So it's and they all look, I don't know if you noticed, they all look fucking shattered around that records. It must have been like such a slog to get into it. It's like, do you like that album? I think you said that was one of the ones you purchased, right?
Ian X and Y.
Yeah.
See, I actually quite liked it, to be honest with you. It does get a lot of shit, but yeah, I remember really vividly, literally like save my money and going to buy it for myself for some reason. So I think that's when I kind of started to get into Coldplay, because it was after the success they'd had. I was like, oh, okay, who's this band Coldplay? And then I heard they were releasing a new album and I bought it.
Yeah.
And my only source of playing music then was just playing it in my mum's car. So
yeah.
I remember just playing it in all the journeys. But yeah, I believe, was it around the same time, or maybe I'm making this up, that Oasis brought out...
I think it was the same...
Importance of Being an Idol.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Because I think I bought that for my brother's birthday whilst I got X and Y for myself.
You get like two for £10 at HMV.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like The Hardest Part is one of my favourite songs by them.
Hmm.
Swallowing the Sea, Till Kingdom Come... Like some really good tracks on that album, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, they probably had an idea in mind of what they wanted to do, and they probably just didn't achieve it. And I think with the bullshit surrounding it, it must be like exhausting to get through. And
yeah, there was a 3-year gap as well, wasn't there, between Rush of Blood? So I think that's probably a lot of anticipation. They're at their height after that second album.
Yeah.
Had they headlined Glastonbury by that point already? Or
yeah, I think they headlined Glastonbury really quickly. Like I think it was like 2002, so they did it off the second record, which I think the second record is regarded as like one of their best, as in cause it's got like In My Place and God Put a Smile on Your Face and everything. But yeah, I think the SMY era is interesting. And I mean, there's that bit where he's like, you know, he's like laying on stage, just like really moody because of that New York Times article. And to be fair, that article is basically called The Case Against Coldplay. And I like had a little read of it this morning. And it's pretty much just, you know, shitting on him, which must be like hard to actually swallow. And I think for somebody like him, he seemed to really care about what people were saying. Like, you're going to drive yourself insane if you're, you know, have that attitude towards stuff. But, you know, the article basically says like his lyrics are nonsense and they were already feeling pretty bad about the LP. So, yeah, must have been like a tough couple of years. I mean,
I mean, they're probably going to go on to make history in terms of headlining spots at Glastonbury, you'd think, if they carry on the way they are.
Yeah. I think it's funny also, you know, you see him backstage arguing and like Chris Martin saying like, oh, what a cunt or something. And then he goes out on stage and sings like a Fix You or something. It's like a really gentle sort of love song.
It's funny, that song's actually one of my favourite Coldplay songs as well.
It's quite a moving song, isn't it? It's sort of undeniable that, but...
It's become their like biggest X Factor
type
song. It's like, or like Great Britain's Got Talent. It's like, that's three yeses.
Definitely.
I used to love it, but I think it's, you hear it everywhere now, whether it be adverts, films, like it's so there. It could be used in so many occasions, but it's a catchy track.
I think that's the problem as well. Like they are, I mean, particularly for our era, as in, you know, being in parents' cars and just listening to the radio, they're literally played everywhere. So
they end up being a soundtrack to your life.
Exactly.
You can't escape it.
It's quite funny when he's like, you know, he turns around and he's like, what are the lyrics again? He's like, he just says it. He's like, and he's like, is that shit? And he's...
I honestly thought I would tell him, if I was there, I'd be like, why are you singing that? That doesn't make any sense. And it doesn't even sound very good. And then they show him singing it at the gig, wherever they're playing, a massive stadium, whatever. And then he sings those lyrics. And just before he started singing, I thought, oh, okay, they're showing this to show how good it sounds now. Kind of like, fuck you, I told you the lyrics are good. And I was like, still sounds shit.
Which bit is this? Just for people that haven't seen it.
What song was it, Sean?
Fix You, or was it?
Oh, yeah. It's like, tears run down your face. Something I can't replace. Tears run down your face.
What do you say like that? It doesn't. I mean, I'd love you to have a conversation with Chris Martin. If we can ever engineer that, that'd be fantastic. Just because I think you'd have.
I would actually be interested to chat to him about the lyrics and see how much thought he puts into them.
Yeah.
Especially like now, I guess on the first, you know, the first couple of albums, he must have put a lot of effort in and dug deeper. But I just don't know. I just feel like they're so generic.
You know, there's that bit where they're talking about which lyrics they should put on a T-shirt. Have you got any? You got any ones that you'd like to put on, or is there any T-shirt you'd wear? Like, what lyrics would you wear on a T-shirt of Coldplay's? And
to be honest, I couldn't tell you any Coldplay lyrics. That's how little I enjoy.
Just that or something.
Oh, whoa. Yeah. Probably. I mean, that sums up Coldplay in itself. So probably that.
No, is there any lyrics you'd wear on a T-shirt, mate?
I don't know. Maybe. Honey, you are a rock.
Oh my god.
Honey, you are a rock in my life.
That's like my favourite Coldplay song, Green Eyes.
Yeah.
Just the early stuff. The first two albums I was actually in love with.
Yeah.
They're so good.
I think the other thing that puts me off is that I think it was the second album, what is it, Rush of Blood to the Head?
Mm.
There's tunes on there that were like typical high school music class songs. It was The Scientist was on there, right?
Yeah.
I think it was that. And you would go into like music and you kind of don't really want to be there sort of thing. Like, we're going to play this song now. Here's how you play it on the keyboard. doing that for an hour, and it's like, oh my God.
Yeah, that's actually a good point, because I feel like, yeah, because they were so popular, a lot of music teachers would have just cottoned onto that and said, oh yeah, we can like sing this song. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I definitely remember everybody, because The Scientist is relatively easy to play as well, so it's usually somebody who would learn their first chords, and then you just hear it coming from all angles, basically. And then you had...
Or Yellow.
Yeah, exactly. And then you...
No, we had a kid, do you remember them? I obviously won't say his name, but we had a... you know what I'm talking about, sure. There was this guy who was like, you know, he kept himself to himself or whatever, maybe a little bit nervous.
Bless him.
And this was like, this was GCSE music, I think. So the people doing it were kind of like, I want to, you know, you had to choose to do the GCSE music. Yeah. We kind of did, and then it wasn't amazing. And we did this like concert, and everyone's putting loads of effort in, and there's bands, and, you know, fairly a lot of sound going on in these acts. And then this guy comes on with this, like, you know, classic school keyboard with a DJ.
Yeah,
DJ. And he just play like the worst, picks the worst sound for the key. Yeah. He's singing.
Bless.
And
was he being serious?
I mean, yeah, it was.
It was part of like the grade as well. But yeah, I mean, bless him. It was. I mean, to be fair, I feel like he might have followed you, Rich, and you had just done an outstanding slap bass performance.
So, yeah,
I remember, because it was like, because obviously, like, everybody was like, you know, you could play chords and stuff like that. Most people could play chords or a little bit here and there, but you were obviously a really good bassist, so everybody was like, oh my God, he's on fire, man.
And I had Aaron playing the drums as well. Yeah. It was just me and Aaron, just slap bass and like funk drums. Yeah,
it was great.
So I'm really sort of going for it, pumping.
Yeah, it was,
and then this guy comes on.
He was doing like the, just like, it's like an instrumental, and it's like piano, so you got the chords. And you know when the melody's just a little bit out of time, so it went, oh, bless him. But shout out to that guy. I hope he's doing well, man.
I actually got, you know, on Facebook memories, it came up yesterday. It's like 3 years ago yesterday or something. It was my leaving drinks at Age UK when I worked there.
Yeah.
And I got, I was quite pissed, but I ended up on the pianos in King's Cross, and I ended up playing The Scientist as well, because it's literally one of the only songs I know on a piano. I'm not a musician, come on, I only dabble. But then I had like a little random crowd, like of like six people behind me, just like singing along, because they were like smashed, and it was actually a really funny moment. I'll put it on the stories.
Is that your funny. People's lasting memory of you at Age UK? So, do you remember that Neil guy? He went out with an absolute bang at King's Cross Station.
Yeah, that was my that's been my peak in my music career, other than busking at university and raising about £11 for the MS Society.
That's a good contribution, mate. Yeah. I thought it was interesting in the doc. Well, I've always found it interesting actually that Brian Eno was involved with Coldplay, because obviously Brian Eno from Roxy Music been involved with the really experimental Bowie period in the 70s, and it was interesting that he was sort of on board, and like they were saying, like, we were looking for the new Brian Eno, but they got the old Brian Eno. And it's always interesting hearing his stories. Have you heard about these oblique strategy cards that he has?
Mm.
There's like a little website that you can like generate them on. So for those who don't know, and Neil, I don't know if you heard about this, but basically when you're making a record and you're in a bit of a sort of a corner, you can get these cards out, and and what it does is it prompts creativity. So for instance, if I'm picking one right now, it says you can only make one dot at a time, and it's sort of, you just got to take your interpretation of that and then try and fuel that into the thing. I'll do another one. Don't be frightened of cliches. That must have been one for fucking Chris Martin.
He definitely didn't listen to that one. He didn't get that one.
He's got a whole deck of just that card.
It's a dud deck. Let's do one more. Listen to the quiet voice. Maybe we should do a whole podcast and like every 5 minutes, just to get the oblique track. Deal, we're going to do that. Let's do that as a bonus episode. I think that's a great idea. But well, there is one card, apparently, where it says delete everything you've worked on and start again. And apparently, so if you get it, obviously you're meant to go with it, but there's like exceptions. Like if you know, if you are actually enjoying it, then you can like put it to one side. But the general rules are that you've got to do like everyone you've got to follow, which is an interesting one.
Apart from if you don't want to.
Exactly, yeah. But I mean, there's that bit, wasn't there, where like they've all got blindfolds on and he's got like the drum on his head and
took him to Barcelona to
Yeah. And to be fair, they sounded pretty, the other members sounded pretty good. Like I always feel like when I see him live, it looks very heavily overdubbed, you know, their backing vocals, like it sounds fucking crystal clear every time. I'm like, surely not. But they sounded pretty good there, to be fair.
Do you reckon Brian Eno is actually into Coldplay?
That, yeah, I don't know, because I mean, he must have done it, liked him enough to, you know, sort of get on board with him. Because I think he got on board with him around like Viva La Vida, and then did that Milo Zeloto album with him, which I think is like some of their most interesting work as well. Like they, at least they were experimenting a bit. But I know there was also a moment where, I don't think it was in the doc, but I've heard Chris Martin talking about it. He sent a song to David Bowie because he wanted him to like duet on it. I think it's called Luna. And I think he showed it to him, and David Bowie was just like, oh yeah, it's not one of your best, Chris. Which must be. I mean, I can't imagine Bowie being on a Coldplay track, but you know, fair play to them for trying, I think. But,
and then Noel Gallagher, I mean, it's safe to say he didn't like Coldplay. Come on.
Yeah, yeah. I think,
like, you can see him in the studio playing a guitar on that tune, and he don't want to be there.
Yeah, I think, yeah.
He's got a man in it, obviously.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But it's so funny that Chris Martin's then, as Noel's playing his solo on the tune, you can hear Chris Martin talking. He's like, yeah, you know, this is what this album's about, you know, whether you have the same sort of outlook on life as me, or you're like a little Mona, like Noel Gallagher. This is about everyone and everyone coming together and showing up to do their part in the album.
Yeah.
And Noel's there like, yeah, just give me my check, please.
Yeah, he's literally like, he looks so moody, doesn't he, when he's playing it.
But that's why I don't like Chris Martin.
Why? Because of the oneness.
Because he's just crap.
I was surprised when they did that Manchester gig that
Liam
and Coldplay did, like, Live Forever as well. I wouldn't have thought Liam Gallagher would be a fan, but apparently he is cited in saying that he does love their first two albums, to be fair.
Yeah. Well,
everyday
fan. What were you going to say, Rich?
I was going to go off on one about Chris Martin doing that tribute to George Michael after he died.
Yeah, I mean,
come on.
Yeah, I mean, the original is so good as well. They should have just, like, let that play over the system.
Why Chris Martin? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Are they saying that he's the next George Michael?
Yeah.
Like, I don't get it. Why is Chris Martin everywhere?
Yeah.
Whenever there's something negative going on and someone needs, like, a tribute, he's like, yeah, I'll do it.
It's weird.
Don't worry, I'll do it.
There's sort of like an ongoing joke at Glastonbury that he always tries to worm his way into the slot, because when I was there last time, I think he came on stage for Stormzy's set and he did like Blinded by Your Grace with him. And everyone's like, oh, it's cool, Chris Martin's there, cool. And then like he pops up fucking everywhere, it's like every day. And he pops up on like Kylie Minogue's set and everything like that.
This is the thing though, he's running the risk of his appearances just instigating this sort of reaction, like, oh, Chris is here again.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, man. I'd hate to be famous. You know the bit where, in a dock where he's riding his bike through the street and everybody just swarms him? I mean, it must be fun every now and then, but every day.
Oh, mate, I'd love it. I'd be like, me, me.
I would be an absolute sweaty mess. I sweat if someone looks at me on the tube.
Just all the watching eyes.
Why are they looking at me? Imagine that for like 1,000 people.
Yeah, it would be rough, I think. Neil, do you connect with like Chris Martin's ethos, or do you think it's a bit too sugary?
What do you mean?
As in, you know, like his outlook's very, we're all one, we're all humans.
It's not sugary, mate. No, I bet it.
I don't necessarily connect to it, but I don't see that as a reason to like not like
him. Yeah.
I just kind of like, that's him. You do you. You just. If he releases music that I like, then I'll continue to kind of follow Coldplay.
But yeah.
if not,
I don't really hold it against people if they're like a bit different, but I guess sometimes you can be a bit like, I don't know, a bit cloudy, away with the fairies of sometimes what I've heard him say.
Yeah.
But each of their own. I'm sure he's had a lot of weird experience in his life to lead him to that.
Yeah,
but,
definitely.
And you have to remember, like, people like pick out on like which things he says as well. He's probably said so many like reality check things as well that people just ignore. They just focus on like all the kind of airy fairy shit.
Yeah, exactly. What about you, Rich? I take it you don't connect to his ethos.
I mean, there's parts of it which is obviously like you've got to live life and all that, but it's just the constant going on about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, I don't know. It just seems really. You can see it in the doc as well. Like where he's not performing and he's kind of being more himself and not chatting to the camera, he's a lot better. But then as soon as there's a camera or he's on stage, suddenly he's gone from like just being this kind of chill guy to wearing like this massive multicolored outfit.
Yeah.
Jumping around saying like, believe in love. I love love. Believe in love. Believe in love.
Yeah.
I just don't get it. Just chill, mate.
I mean,
get it.
Yeah, I'd say it's good that obviously they've got a massive platform, haven't they? So it's good that they're spreading a positive message. But I think it's just the fact that everybody's overexposed to it. You know, they're at, you know, every ceremony. They'll be like the Paul McCartney, do you know what I mean? They're always going to be whipped out at these like massive British events, I think. So it's just the, yeah.
Yeah, but then like at least they're, like you say, with a positive message, at least they're doing something positive, yeah. Believing in something positive. It's so, that's why we're talking about them, because they're different like that.
Yeah.
Whereas like so many times, you know, going to a gig doesn't have to be necessarily always.
Yeah.
I don't know. I know it's not depressing, but at least it's really uplifting sometimes. It's just sometimes it's that tiny bit too much pinch where you're like, oh, I do get what you're saying, but maybe ease up a tiny bit. But I kind of respect that. I think there should be more of that, but just maybe dialed down a bit. I think a lot more people would listen if it was dialed down, but I respect what he's trying to say.
I definitely respect it.
So I don't appreciate when you two start talking shit about my man, yeah?
No, I definitely got a huge respect for him, for sure. It's just like, I guess it's not always like, the music's not always my taste, but no, I definitely got respect for him. What would you say is your favourite Coldplay song, Richard, if you had to choose one?
I mean, I can literally only name you a few.
Fix You, you said it.
And well, I think that's the only one because it's just the one that sticks in my head. And when it comes on, for some reason, I go, Fix You. But apart from that, like, I don't like The Scientist. I don't like Yellow. And I couldn't name you any other song or tell you what album they're from. So,
did you have to play any songs in your covers band that you do for weddings and stuff?
Never done a Coldplay one.
Really? That's surprising. I thought you would have for some reason.
I don't think anyone's ever asked me to play one either.
Really? Interesting.
No, never. Which is...
Well, I'm going to book you for my wedding and I'm going to have Coldplay owned.
Yeah.
But I will pay you fucking dearly, boy.
Yeah,
you got to sing.
Pay up front and then not show up.
And Rich, after watching the documentary, did you feel any different about them from when you went into it?
Yeah, there's definitely a part of me that connected more to them just because they seem like normal lads and they've kind of made it, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's something that I wanted to do. And it's nice seeing people coming from, I know, into boarding school and that, and it's a bit, but... but apart from that, I can kind of connect to it, and yeah, it was just a nice story.
Yeah,
but I wouldn't listen to the music. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Would you go to a gig? I reckon we should get Rich to a gig, Coldplay gig, when we get a chance.
just film his reactions. Yeah. Just fuck the music.
The documentaries put me off more from going to a gig or listening to music. I felt like my eyes were bleeding by the end of it. I was like,
so much colour. Yeah.
I was like, doing like what dogs do when they're a bit nervous, they sort of turn their heads to the side and side eye.
It's interesting though, because it's like the contrast of like going into the doc, watching a doc, you come out being like, okay, like I a small part of me connects with them a bit more now after seeing their journey, and that's with them as people. And then you're like, oh, but the music, I feel even worse about their music coming out that time. Yeah. It's kind of like brought you closer, but then separated you two like completely at the same time.
I've had it where I've watched documentaries about musicians or other people where the process of them making it and get to this point, there was like a lot more going on, a lot more lows and highs and more personal stuff. Whereas this documentary, there wasn't so much of that. It was kind of just like, cool, it's really normal. Like, I've done a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
There's no real, oh, shit, can't believe that sort of thing. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that reflects what it is like, because I feel like you never feel like there's a point where you just go massive. It's just sort of a gradual thing. Or a lot of these bands, you get massive really quickly.
It's not so much that, because there was definitely a moment where it sort of went, oh, sweet, pew, we're signed and we're doing this and that. But it's just them, like, what they kind of went through. There's no, like, real personal struggles or... Not that everyone needs to have a struggle, but for some reason that's what I connect to. I'm just realising that now.
Yeah, and that's the documentary as well, just because Head Full of Dreams so far ahead, they've kind of had to brush over that initial period, whereas that initial period when they're young and trying to make it, that to me is my favourite part of the doc. So, yeah, it would be nice to have it all about how they got to that stage rather than, like, all the fluffy shit in between.
Yeah, and I think they're probably trying to focus more on positives because that's their whole ethos.
What about you, Neil? Are you, what's your favourite song, would you say? And also, did the documentary change anything about your opinion of Coldplay?
Favorite songs, I said Green Eyes, and I also love Warning Sign. And then one more is, what was that? Oh, Everything's Not Lost. I think that's a great song. So both, all three from the first two albums. There's been songs that I like throughout each of their albums. It's just, those two albums just, I don't know, speak to me, man. But what's the other question? How do I feel?
Did it change anything about your opinion of him?
No, similar to what Rich said, it didn't necessarily distance myself from the music, but I appreciated their journey a bit more. I really admired his kind of positivity, if I'm honest, like when he did say, like, in 4 years and stuff, because so many people, like, that's what we all dream of doing, like having the balls to say something like that and actually making it work, and then looking back and be like, I fucking told you, like, what have you got to say now? And it's just, I admired that quite a lot of times, but at the same time, it made me think there must be so many bands that are doing that at the same time now, doing all these documentaries in case they get big, and then they're like, oh shit, just burn it, burn the footage. I really like the documentary, but like I said, I think I would have loved to have seen more footage of when they were young as well. I think that was, I think that's where like the rawness and authenticity comes, but rather than like the fluffy shit on stage.
I'd sort of say, my favourite track would be Politic.
Did anyone ask?
Well, I'm answering my own question. All right. Okay.
Go on. Sean, just out of interest, what's your favourite track?
Oh,
Sean,
glad you asked, Neil. So I'd say my favourite track is actually Politic, which is on Rush of Blood to the Head. Good opener. But also maybe I quite like the Viva La Vida era as well, like the Strawberry Swing. It's really good. Yeah, like with the doc as well, I think I enjoyed seeing, like you said, the sort of rougher parts of it. Like, I find that X and Y era quite fascinating, but also, you know, like seeing all the early days, because with Coldplay you're so used to seeing them in the glitz and the glamour of what they look like now, and obviously they all look like fantastic because they've probably got like Gwyneth's skin routine going on or something. But I don't know, I really enjoyed the doc. I think, like you say, really great story, and I just like seeing like the sort of dorky, you know, kids in the dorm just like fucking talking shit and then getting on
whip that card out, delete everything that you've already recorded.
guys, bad news. We gotta delete everything. Well, to Coldplay, big respects, man. You're doing your thing. Love the doc. And Rich, great to have you back for a bit of input.
Love you, Chris Martin. Thank you.
Love your point of view, man. And Neil, good to speak, man.
So I don't appreciate when you two start talking shit about my man, yeah?